from the WEEI studios. 93.7 WEEI FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston. We're always live on the free Odyssey app.
I was talking to some of our friends on the Netflix production about that very thing with Tristan Casas. Somebody asked him, you know, you seem very good with the media. Why is that? He said, I think the media has a really hard job, and I figure if I give them something interesting to say, that it'll help them.
And he does give us plenty of interesting notes. He's stealing the third here. Here's the throw, and he's going to be out.
There's no excuse. You know, he knows it. You know, he just took off. We cannot push the envelope that way. You know, we cannot do it. That's the bottom line. You know, 27 outs are too valuable in this game. And the same way we talk about defense, like we cannot give the opposition 27 outs, we cannot do the same offensively. You know, we only have 27, especially, you know, against teams like this, you know, so we have to take care of it. And he talked to Huddy, you know, he's like, man, I just trying to do too much in that situation.
That is just not even in the galaxy of a good baseball play.
Not in the galaxy of a good baseball play, says Will Fleming. That's last night here on WEEI. Red Sox lose again in extra innings. They were talking about this on the television broadcast last night. This team just gets when they get to extra innings, they just get destroyed. And the theory went, that's because they're basically out of pitchers and they just get bombarded in these extra innings. But no, once they get to extra innings, it's never a one-run game. They get crushed. It happened against Baltimore. It happened again last night.
It's true, but I think you also have to look at why are they getting to extra innings. I mean, look, in the case of last night, it's not like Jansen put out his best stuff out there. Like, Abreu basically saved him to go into extra innings rather than just losing it in the ninth.
And it wasn't, they didn't run out of pitchers. Winkowski is a fresh pitcher that 11th inning, and he's one of their good relievers. So it wasn't even that.
No, but you run out of choices.
You run out of choices.
The point of having somebody who is an all-star closer last year is that he closes the game.
Yeah, for last night. What about some of the Baltimore ones? They've been bombarded in these, and Jansen's been terrible. We told you. Like, this is coming. Too many guys on the bases. This is coming. He's going to blow a save. He blew the save last night. They ultimately get to extras where they lose 10-7. They are now 9-9. They've lost two in a row. I can do that math in my head. That's on pace for 81 wins. Their run scoring differential.
You got it. You got it on the first
try. First try. Their run score differential is 3. And that's something that was close to 30 last week. And so they've come crashing back down to earth as our good buddy over at the Boston Globe, apparently healthy. And needling the Red Sox again, Dan Shaughnessy said, order restored to the universe as the Red Sox take over sole possession of last place in the American League East.
The same universe where Tristan Casas trying to steal third in the second is absolutely not a good baseball
player. So there's that. You heard Cora last night after the game. That is, and I forget who I saw make this same point, but it's a shift. From Cora last week, going, we got some young players, there's going to be games like that. He was putting that on Tristan Casas last night. Our buddy Jared Carrabas at Underdog tweeted this out in real time. I don't think I've ever seen a team get picked off more than the 2024 Red Sox, and it's only mid-April. Statistically, the Red Sox have one of the best pitching staffs in baseball and still find ways to embarrass themselves every single night with crappy defense and mental mistakes. That was somebody knocking on the window outside. So when it comes to this baseball team, the fundamentals have been an issue. We talked about this yesterday. It continued last night for the great catch that Abreu made, and you just referenced that, Mego. He also butchered a play in right field. Connor Wong illegally blocked home plate. Tristan Casas is getting picked off. And so you have all these mistakes that are routinely happening. Some are you know, mental errors, and some are physical errors. But we've been talking how much of that is going to be on the manager. Like, how much of that is on Alex Cora? We saw that last year. We're seeing it again this year. We're going to talk to Alex Cora about it in about 10 minutes here on Jones and Mego with Arcan on WEEI. But regardless of how much you want to put on Cora, regardless of how much you want to put on the players or, you know, slice up that blame pie, it's irrefutable. They continue to happen night after night after night. And they're killers. And last night to me was especially egregious. You were down 5-1. You battle back. You take the lead. And then you crap your pants. Like, that was different than some of these other ones where they fall behind and never get back in the game.
And it's such a clear example because it's like the guys who hit home runs last night. It's Cassis and it's Wong, and I know Devers in there too, but Cassis and Wong, and these are the same guys who are making those big errors in the game defensively. Wong not being able to tag the runner, and then, which is just kind of like ridiculous, that replay, it was so immediate. It was like, oh my God, he didn't even touch him. And then Tristan Cassis.
You're talking about an extra innings?
Yeah,
yeah,
with
yeah,
what well, we just talked about, but like...
Well, that was a horrible throw by Raffaello, too.
Right, there, right, yeah. But I'm just looking at it saying, like, it's tough. It just shows you, as much as you want to yada yada pass all the defensive struggles, that this is what continues to kill the team. Even when you're doing things well on the other side, this is what kills you. And it's the same as last year. It feels the same as last year, just a little bit worse, actually.
It also feels like it's killed them in every single one of their losses.
Yeah.
Like, every loss has had something like this, whether it was an error in the field or a base running error or something along those lines, passed balls, wild pitches, like all those things. Just it's really amazing how a team can be 500, 9-9 in almost every single one of their losses, and even some of their wins, they had some errors in too, but every single one of their losses was marred by not just an error, but like a meltdown. Like a domino effect of one guy doing something wrong and then another guy doing it, and then it just piles on top of itself until you're out of the game, a game that you were winning, a game that was close, a game that your starter kept you in through 5 2/3 innings or whatever it is, and the same thing happens every single time.
It's like it's contagious when yeah. somebody makes a mistake.
Yeah, well, look, as bad as it feels, and they've dropped 3 out of their last 10, they're 500, they're still only a game and a half out of a playoff spot. They're only a game back at Toronto and Tampa, so the question becomes... Is this a bottoming out? Will they rebound from this, or are they rounding back into form where a lot of people projected them to be? So you can jump in, 617-779-7937. We can add that to our Bill Belichick discussion. We've been reading all day from the newest at ESPN. Voted off the island, inside Bill Belichick's failed job hunt by Don Van Natta, Seth Wickersham, and Jeremy Fowler. And we've been asking a spinoff question. After Bill didn't get hired in Atlanta, he wasn't a top three finalist in Atlanta. He couldn't get a sniff anywhere else around the NFL. Philly, Dallas, potential openings, or actual vacancies, Tennessee, Vegas, what have you. Couldn't even get a sniff at any of those spots. Do we think Bill Belichick will ever coach in the NFL again? Again, 51% of you say yes, 49% say no. You can vote at Jones and Mego. You can jump in on the phones. Part of the impediment there, part of the hurdle for Bill Belichick, is Robert Kraft calling up Arthur Blank and ripping him, calling him untrustworthy, calling him arrogant, among other things. And so does Bill still have that working against him? You can vote there. Meanwhile, can I hear Alex Cora after the game last night? Here's what he had to say about a couple of injuries the Red Sox sustained in game. Garrett Whitlock leaves with an oblique issue after 5 innings. And we had Rafael Devers leave later on in the game. Here's what Cora said last night.
We're going to wait and see how Whit feels tomorrow. With Rafi, we're discussing if we're going to take Imogen just to make sure everything is okay. You know, he came out of nowhere. It's in that there was a play he made in the 7th. He was kind of like playing in the mini shift, and he felt it there. So we'll know more tomorrow.
Okay, they'll know more tomorrow. That's today. So we're going to ask Alex Cora about that about 5 minutes from now. Get all the latest on Whitlock, who after the game called it precautionary. And Devers, that one sounds scarier. They're going to get imaging?
Yeah, so they're taking him to get an MRI. That is very scary to me because it's something that's brand new that came out of nowhere. It's his knee, the left knee discomfort. It's not the shoulder that he's been dealing with from spring training. So I
or the bump on the back of his head from Tyler O'Neill.
Right, right, right. The teeth embedded in the back of his head or whatever's going on there. No, that's scary to me. That's definitely scary to me.
Okay, so Devers said through a translator after the game, you know, this is weird because he's normally a guy who plays a lot. And we talked about this last week. You know, save for missing a few games in 2022, he still played 141. You know, his career low is 57. That was in the COVID-shortened year. But other than that, in full seasons, 121, 156, 156, 141, 153. And so he made the point, well, I'm normally a guy who's healthy. Well,
getting older.
He doesn't look like he's in the best shape. And exactly, Mego. Like, you can get away with being not in your best shape when you're 23, when you're 25. How about when you're 27? How about when you're 28, 29, 30, and some of the years they're paying for coming up in this contract? That's maybe where the Bills coming due a little bit. And I'm with Mego on this, Arcan. What's frightening is this is a new injury. This isn't related to what we saw before. I thought that one might have been related to his physique. Your knee? when you're in the field, I'd say that's definitely related to it.
Yeah, 100% it is. And the fact that you also heard Cora, and we'll ask him about this too, I'm sure, talking about, well, we got to be really careful with Rafi. That's what he'd been saying the entire time with that shoulder injury. It was the same sort of answer. We're going to be really careful. We don't want to risk him the rest of the season. We need him, blah, 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 all that stuff, which is true, by the way. I mean, they do need him. They can't risk losing him now for the year or for any long extended period of time if they want to stay in the race. And, I mean, a new injury now that they have need to get imaging on, I think it's almost certain he's going to hit the IL here.
Arcan thinks IL,
I think.
You're going that far.
Yeah.
I mean, look, okay. It's scary.
Just based on the way Cora's been talking, yeah, okay. About the shoulder injury,
how long
which
does
is
it
a different
take?
Injury.
How long does it take for these guys? Because I feel like this varies all the time.
I'd be shocked if he doesn't go on.
Well, whenever there's injuries, how long does it take for them to get the MRI imaging?
Oh, I'm sure he got it last night.
Okay. But do you remember there was like a point with somebody last year where it was like, oh, we still are waiting on all the imaging.
Yeah, but that's a lie.
Like,
that's a lie to me. Like they're getting second opinions and stuff like that. They know. And they could get imaging probably right away after the game last night. And so he doesn't want to tell the media. And maybe he'll tell us coming up here in a little bit. One other play. I want to ask Cora about this. What do you think of that play at the plate? Not the one in extra innings where Rafaela threw it and Wong whiffed on the tag. The one where initially they called it out. I think it was Giménez coming around third base. And initially called out on the field, and then Wong was ruled to block the plate. I think emphasizing that rule, they did it properly. I just don't know how I feel about that rule.
I hate the rule.
I don't feel like Connor Wong obstructed too much of anything. And, you know, not to cry for the Red Sox. They might have lost that game either way. But just that's you don't see that pop up a lot. And that felt like an awfully, you know, soft enforcement, even if it's proper by letter of the law.
Yeah, I hate that rule. I hate how it's enforced. And I also think that in that situation, he moved his foot over. It wasn't like he blocked it with his body. He moved his left foot over, and he needed to in order to transfer the ball and try and make the tag, which I thought he whiffed on the tag. I watched like 20 angles of that thing, and I never actually saw him put the tag down. So like when they were reviewing it, I'm like, did he actually tag him? It doesn't look like he tagged him. And then it ended up being an obstruction. But I thought that he was going to be ruled safe anyway, regardless. But I do hate that rule. I hate the way they enforced it there. I hate it in general. But yeah, I mean, what the hell else is Wong supposed to do there?
I agree, but it's like at the end of the day, the rule is the rule, so he's got to abide by it.
Yeah, I just think, you know, when we're talking about all
the rule sucks, but it's still in place. Like, he's still got to abide by it. There's plenty of rules that suck that they call all the time.
I know.
Yeah, I just, you know.
It's like a new one, though.
And we've been talking about all these pitcher injuries related to the pitch clock and Kenley Jansen crying about that the other day to Rob Bradford on the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast, which we played for you. I think we played you Jansen on Monday. We talked to Bradford a little bit about it yesterday. And you know, you have all these rules in place and guardrails in place for player safety when it comes to the catcher, but then these pitchers are dropping like flies left and right. The catcher one just, that feels like such an obscure thing because it comes up so infrequently. Like, again, to your point, Arcan, he just kind of stuck out his foot last night,
right?
Which I guess is dirty-ish, but it's not like he was blocking the plate or he's down on his knees covering up the plate.
Veritek is going to get him like a three-point stance.
And so to me, that feels like you're trying to it's almost like the stupid hip drop tackle in the NFL. Like, do we really need to officiate that and get that out of the game? How often does it come up? How often are people really getting hurt at the end of the day? Why is that even a rule? I'm not saying they enforced it poorly. I'm just wondering why it's even a rule in the first place.
I think it's because of Buster Posey and that injury.
No, I understand, but like they overreacted to
it. Oh, 100% they did.
But
I mean,
they're overreacting to these hip drop tackles.
You're sort of saying like what was the genesis of it? I think that was a big part of it. Just like Mark Andrews was the genesis of the hip drop thing.
No.
You know, like a big high profile injury and all of a sudden they decide, hey, we got to make a whole big new rule here and enforce it and make sure it's the most important thing in the league this year. And it's stupid. I agree with you.
No, so that's true. And it does take a high profile player going down to get that level of reaction. So it's Jones and Mega with Arcan here on WEEI. We are live today, by the way, in our Ford Clubhouse Fenway studio, and we'll be here taking you up to game three between the Red Sox and the Guardians tonight. We're joined now by Red Sox manager Alex Cora, who joins us on the Harbor One Hotline. He's brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by Sherwin-Williams. The Sherwin-Williams Pro Plus program helps you manage and grow your paint business. Alex, how are we doing today?
I'm doing okay. I was better last week.
Well, that makes sense. Is that just about results, or is that about some of the players who left last night's game? We were just discussing this. Rafael Devers, Garrett Whitlock, each left. Whitlock called it precautionary after the game.
Yeah.
Devers, you said, might get some imaging done after the game last night. What's the latest on their situations?
Yeah, actually, Rafi's feeling good. There's a chance he'll play tonight. I'm just waiting for him to show up. We actually pushed everything back today, batting practice-wise and all that stuff. So you know, the medical team is going to check him out, and if he's a go, he'll DH. With Witt, he just got here. They're going to check him out. But that's what's going on right now with me. You know, like everything that is going on, and you got to move pieces and build the lineup, and how are we going to manage the bullpen, right? Right now we're in a position, it's been what, there's going to be 13 straight days in a row, including tomorrow. A lot of close games, so the usage of the bullpen has been up there, you know, and we are a little bit banged up in that area, right? Some guys were going to be down today, and that's where, you know, it comes into play. That's the part of managing.
I want to get back to that, but I wanted to ask you about, it seems like in a couple of the games now, there are these small mental mistakes defensively, whether it's Devers ending up in the outfield and not getting called off by O'Neill, or whether it's Cassis trying to, that's more of an offensive error, but trying to push the envelope, as you said.
I can walk you through all of
them. Yeah. Okay. So it's on both sides, but it's like these small mental errors. Do you find any common denominator that you're able to identify with these mental hiccups?
I want to say inexperience, but at the end of the day, we have played the game for a long, long time. It's just a different stage, right? And sometimes it's like feeling the pressure of being in the big leagues and try to prove a point, or just, you know, thinking the wrong thing. You know, like yesterday, Cassis was very honest about it. You know, that's a bad baseball play. The other day, it was bases loaded with Kenley, fly ball to center field. Hammy lines up third base. Rafaela goes to first, and Neto tags from first, and that's the winning run for the Angels. And stuff like that is the ones that, on a daily basis, you sit down with these kids, you know, with these players, and you show them video and you talk to them through the situation. I think I said it yesterday after the game. I've been saying it for a long, long time. You know, the value of 27 outs is real. It's real. You get 27s offensively, you get 27 defensively. If you give more than 27 to the opposition, they're gonna cash in. If we get more than 27, we're gonna do the same thing. But if we are giving outs away in the base path, you know, the other day, you know, Cassis takes off. There was another one. It was a bug move with Valdi at first. He gets picked off. There was one with Wong. We went first move. That's on me. You know, we're trying to take advantage of the situation. But at this level, those mistakes, they're going to cost you, you know, and we've been very sloppy. And it started in the West Coast. You know, I know it was a good one, but towards the end, there were a lot of mistakes, you know. Those are the ones that we're always talking about it. We talk about it in spring training, but at the end, we have to do it at 7 o'clock. You know, at 5 o'clock is great, you know, the machine work and all that stuff, but at 7, we have to do it, and so far we haven't done it.
Yeah, and it's something that last year was sort of an issue too with the infield defense, to be sure. Going into this spring, obviously Trevor Story was healthy and his injury caused the domino effect, but I guess were you anticipating maybe that there was going to be some more kind of growing pains like this to start the year?
Not the way we play in spring. I think, you know, Casas was better. He's been actually good at first base. We know about Valdez, you know, his lack of range is something that we know. You know, this is a player, he's a good offensive player that is going to make the routine plays. Hamilton, it feels like the game is going fast right now on him. He was able to slow it down a little bit yesterday, but he's a lot better than this. And that's our job. You know, Rafi, we know Rafi is here to hit 35 and drive in 120 and make the routine plays. He's been okay, especially to his left. But just talking to them, the outfield defense, it has surprised me because I do believe we're a lot better than last year. Abreu with his arm. Yesterday, we talked about that situation down the line. Just catch the ball, throw to second. No, don't put pressure on yourself. So disappointing, to be honest with you, surprised too, but we can't stop working. You know, we got to keep going. Today we'll do the same thing. We'll talk about the mistake that we made. We got to be better at this, and hopefully it gets to the point that we just play.
So we're talking to Red Sox manager Alex Cora here on Jones and Mega with Arcan on WEEI. It's time for our Sherwin-Williams question of the week. Sponsored by Sherwin-Williams, you can ask Sherwin-Williams how to bring color to your life. Our Sherwin-Williams question of the week is from Al Doyle at the Al Doyle Company, and it ties in with what we were talking about. The error last night, Cassis picked off second, some of what you're discussing here. You mentioned some of them are on you, some of them are on the players. Do you feel like your message, just to say we got to do this at 7 o'clock, do you feel like that's getting through with the team?
I believe so. It just, we have to do it. You know, we have to do it. And we, like I said, we're young. I understand that. And, you know, we're going to make mistakes. And, you know, we just got to keep teaching them, keep talking to them. And hopefully we can slow down the game and then go. But I do believe the message, you know, they understand one-on-one, and they're trying their best.
You were talking earlier about your, as you like to call it, your pitching structure and how much you're going to have to lean on the bullpen. How much are those pieces moving right now in terms of what you're looking at and little injuries like we saw last night?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kenley yesterday, he struggled. They're a tough matchup for him, especially they put the ball in play. You know, they don't swing and miss. That's what the Guardians do. They got one of the best players in baseball. Everything is around him. You put the ball in play, put him in play. All of a sudden, Ramirez is up with the bases loaded, and he'll do what he does. Chris, we know, has been a little bit banged up the last few days. Wiser, usage-wise, he's been up there. So it's a work in progress, you know, a lot of moving parts. Bernardino has been amazing for us. When he came back yesterday, we had to stretch Joely because of where we were with Whitlock going only four. The good thing is that rotation is doing an outstanding job. You know, what I asked them to do in spring training, going five or more, they've done great. Now we got to figure out the last part of the equation. You know, and if we do that, we're going to be in good shape.
Your starters getting frustrated at all? You know, I mean, they're putting
performances out there. They don't play that game. I mean,
no decisions. I mean,
no. Like, they hate to come out of the game, which is awesome. It's been happening since I got here in 18. But they understand that you go as far as we want you to. And so far, they've been amazing.
One more quick one. And we were talking about this right before you came in. It was a play in the fifth inning last night. Abreu bobbles ball in right. Giménez comes around to score. He's initially ruled out. He ends up being deemed safe because Connor Wong is watching, blocking the plate.
Blocking the plate.
Do you think, I mean, number one, did you think that was enforced properly last night? Number two, what do you think of the rule?
We know why the rule is part of the game. You know, the Posey rule. You know, he got hurt a while ago, and they decided to go this route. I don't think he was blocking the plate. I think the throw took him that way. I understand why the rule is part of the game, and we have to protect our players. That one I don't mind at the plate. The one as a middle infielder that I really miss, in a sense, is like the hard slides at second base. You know, let athletes be athletes. You know, they know how to get out of the way. And, you know, we should let runners try to do what they're supposed to do.
Okay. He's Red Sox manager Alex Cora. He joins us here on the Harbor One Hotline inside our Ford Clubhouse Fenway studio each and every week. Alex, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Be well.
All right. Alex Cora. As all our guests here on Jones and Mego today are brought to you by the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio here and your New England Ford dealers. During your truck month, you can get a great deal on Ford F-Series, America's best-selling trucks for 47 straight years, and the official truck of your Boston Red Sox. Yes?
Arkan, don't feel bad.
That was pretty bad.
Don't
what?
Feel bad.
I thought he was
I
going
did
for
the
one.
Same, no, I
what?
Did the same
I thought
thing
he was going
he
for it.
Up.
I put my hand
Arkan,
up.
No, Arkan went for a fist bump, and Cora just walked away.
I got left hanging
I
like
think
old laundry.
I didn't see it.
Cora had a whole doc crew. When he came in, I went to go give him a handshake, and he just like completely Tom Brady'd me, like turned to the side and was talking to someone on the dock crew.
I was
hey,
right here, put her there, pal.
I was fumbling around for a read. I didn't even see it. Well, maybe you saw it on Twitch. Maybe the Netflix cameras picked it up.
Sure.
Maybe that'll make the Netflix special in 2025. Look out for Arkan getting left hanging there by Alex Cora. We'll get back to your phone call, 617-779-7937. Let's get to the Bruins, too. They got what they wanted, right? Isn't this what we wanted? We'll get to it right after Trending with Arkan.
This is Jones and Mego on WEEI.
Save us as a favorite on the Odyssey app. And take Boston Sports Original everywhere you go.
What were you reinforcing after the first 20, after 40 minutes? What were you telling them about?
Habits and details that we need to get to be good come Saturday. You know, did not think that we, after the first period, I thought, you know, we really needed to dig in. And then after the second period, I said, you know, we're not drawing any penalties for five periods because we're not going to hard areas consistently. That was the message after the second.
Pastrnak gives it away. Artem Zub. Happy ending for the Ottawa Senators.
Okay, that, by the way, was pathetic. And I don't mean the effort by the Bruins. That Pastrnak giveaway that just cemented the game. It's like he wanted the Maple Leafs. It's like, he's like, you know what? We got back in this game. We were down two goals. We're in the game. Now Florida's winning their matchup. I think they were in real time at that point against Tampa. And he's like, screw it. We're getting Toronto. He put it right tape to tape pass to Zub going the other way, who poured in the empty net. You lose
happy
to Ottawa.
Ending.
Yeah, I put one way. It's a happy ending. You lose to Ottawa. That's after you lost to Washington the night before. I don't know how everyone feels about the Bruins' effort level, But I know everyone's happy about the matchup with Toronto, which is now official. And by the way, the Leafs play again tonight. They still have a regular season game.
They
to
play
go.
Tampa tonight, yeah.
Right, so I don't know how many guys they're playing. I don't know who's actually suiting up, but they still have a game. Their regular season isn't over. It's going to be the Bruins and the Leafs on Saturday. So that's official. That's locked in.
Okay, so it's always hard to tell with the pasta giveaway because that is just what he does. But do you think that there was a possibility that somebody up in the stands had, like, you know when you're out on a boat and you'll see people sailing, they have, like, flags that spell out different things. So somebody gave him the signal up there, and he's like, oh, whoa, whoa, whoa.
They called in the code red, and he went tape to tape. Maybe. Could be. I have no idea. I didn't like the result last night. I haven't liked the result the next two games, but I love the matchup. So I'm trying to rationalize those two things. And I told you yesterday, Arkin, when they stunk it up, and they stunk it up the whole game against Washington. At least they woke up late in the second, as Monty was just detailing there. And they were the better team in the third, even though they lost the game. They were taking it to the Senators there at the end of the game, at least before that giveaway by Pastrnak. And so it's not fair to say they completely sleptwalked through the whole game, but they didn't start on time. They looked disinterested, and I don't know if that's a lot of momentum. I don't think it's momentum going into the postseason, but I got to rationalize that with a Toronto matchup where they went 4-0 against the Leafs this year. Arkan, you have more numbers on Swayman I want to circle back to in a moment. Boston has won with this group. The streak goes even longer against Toronto in the postseason. But with this group, which I'll take to mean the Marchand era Bruins now that Bergeron and Chara and all those guys are gone, this group has won three straight series, all went to seven games against Toronto. They've won three straight game sevens against Toronto. Two of them they used to go to the Cup Finals, 2013 and 2019. They lost in the Cup Final both times, but it spurred a deeper run. And Toronto last year advanced past the first round for the first time since 2004.
All right, way to go, Toronto.
I think it's something like four or five times since the 80s. They've just gotten out of round one. It's a pathetic, pathetic franchise. It's a choking-ass franchise. And that part I like, especially the Swayman numbers are.
Yeah, the Swayman numbers are terrific. He was in three of those four games, 3-0 record, obviously, 93 saves, four goals allowed. That's a .959 save percentage and a 1.3 goals against, which is awesome. I mean, that's really, like, awesome numbers from him. And he's the key to all of this, I think. I would take the Bruins with no momentum going into a series against Toronto versus the Bruins with all the confidence and momentum in the world going into a first-round matchup against Tampa Bay. 100 times out of 100, I would.
I think I agree with that, but and I know I said that a couple of weeks ago. Then I watched these last two games, and I'm like, ugh, they look dead and lifeless.
They do. You're right about that. But if it's Swayman, and I think it's going to be, and I hope that they go this way, if it's Swayman and it's against Toronto, you just heard the numbers. I mean, he's been awesome against Toronto.
But when you say
he dominates them this year.
Okay, so I like those stats from you, and I can understand the case made for the matchup. But when you say you think it's Swayman, you think it's going to be Swayman in game one, and they're continuing the rotation?
Yes.
Swayman, and they're going to keep Swayman in there?
I think it's Swayman. He's going to be very good, and they're not going to do the rotation. I think it's going to be Swayman.
Be the smart thing to do. Yeah. I do feel like, okay, if you're going to throw one of these guys in there and he's good, keep him in there. Like, don't go to the goofy rotation. You didn't do it last year, so why would you do it this year?
Okay. I think they haven't announced anything yet, and Monty was asked after the game. He said no in terms of an announcement. He said he might not announce anything until Saturday morning. And they have all the time off in the world, so they can go off rotation if they want. But Arkan emphasized those numbers. They played out matchups down the stretch against Toronto, and not for nothing, Swayman was excellent in his last start, and Ullmark just got beat by Ottawa. So I've always wanted Swayman to start game one. Arkan has always wanted Swayman to start game one. I think he's going to start game one. If he sucks, then maybe they'll go to Ullmark under the guise of we're keeping our rotation going. If Ullmark sucks, then they're really going to have a decision to make. If he's great, then they can stick with Ullmark. If Swayman's great in the first game, like Arkan said, they'll just stick with Swayman. That's what I think they're going to do. The rotation is just in their back pocket, so they don't have to make a decision, and they can kind of explain it as they go along, which to me is not a plan, but I at least get it. Who's your game one starter? You flip-flopped, or at least got close to flip-flopping. We're here. We have 82 games. We have all the data we're going to get. Who's your game one starter?
I think I'm still going with Ullmark.
Oh, my God.
I know. I'm sorry.
You know what?
I can't
say, oh, my God. I actually respect it. At least you stuck to her guns on it.
I can't be won over that much. I can't be won over that much. I really like your numbers, but I think that Swayman's been good in, like, the very last sliver of this season, but I still think I would rather start with Ullmark and either go to Swayman and say it's part of the rotation and act like it's not you giving up on Ullmark, or just give up on Ullmark and go to Swayman and have that in your back pocket.
Okay.
Then the other way around.
So Swayman's been better in the last sliver of the season.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a better overall season.
But Ullmark's been better since the All-Star break.
Since the All-Star. So why do we have to make this arbitrary rule? I heard the Sunday Skate people doing this too. You have this weird arbitrary rule where you have to cut it off. No, I'm just saying that you all want to cut it off
at a
point where Linus Ullmark is the guy who's the better choice. If you do it by this very specific time frame that you want, then yeah, maybe Ullmark looks better there. But I don't understand why you all insist on doing that.
Okay, I don't mind being grouped with the Sunday Skate. That's interesting because they're like the hockey experts.
Not all of them. Bridget and Scott, Razor agreed with me.
Okay, well, I'm just really glad that you are listening so closely to that program.
It's the show that comes on right before my show.
Okay.
I listen to every word of that show.
All it to say, I guess, like, so what, how, it comes down to how do you define what the hot hand is? Like, how long is that? Are you just looking at a couple
of
games
in the
now,
case of Ullmark?
Or are you looking at the performance of work over the entire season or going back to the All-Star break?
Okay.
Because I think it's been a different team since the All-Star break and not in a great way.
Fine. I've seen Ullmark enough in the playoffs to know I don't want to go back to him. That's what looms over everything to me. So if Ullmark were like head and shoulders all year the better goalie, maybe I'd defer and bend the knee. But they were close all year. Their numbers were close. Swayman seems like he's rebounded. Ullmark seems like he's dropped off a touch. He's been better since the All-Star break. But recently, the recent games, Swayman has rounded back into form. To me, how Ullmark has performed and been benched in two straight postseasons looms over everything else. So I want Swayman. That's why I want him. One thing that terrifies me about the Toronto matchup, and this is for me personally, I thought I had perfectly positioned this take.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was a no-lose take. I'm like, the Bruins will be better and go further than last year without Patrice Bergeron. They won't miss Patrice Bergeron. And my out was, well, if they lose in the first round, that's just what they did the year prior. If they choke against Toronto, when they've never choked against Toronto, will that mean they miss Patrice? Well, I have to bend the knee and say they missed Bergeron because they couldn't even get past choking-ass Toronto.
I really think you'll have to at least say this is even worse than last year. There is more pressure on Montgomery now because it would be worse to lose against Toronto in the first round than it was to lose against Florida in the first round.
I thought I had an airtight take, and it turns out there is no such thing. There's an area where I'm exposed.
There's always going to be some exposures. No such thing.
All right. Well, I'm ready to ride. I don't think the Bruins are going to lose to this team. Do you?
To Toronto?
Yes.
Hell no.
Mego?
Definitely not.
No, but I do. I don't think they're going to, but I do love that whenever you throw a question to Arkin when he's looking at something on his feed, he's just shocked that someone asked him a question on the
giant,
radio show.
Giant booties or whatever he's looking
on
at
the radio show, he's like,
on his computer.
Who me? You want my opinion?
Hello? They're not losing to this team, but if they do, I will lose that take. I will acknowledge here today, prior to game one, I will lose out on that take. It's something I did not fully, entirely think through, even though I put a lot of thought into this take. 617-779, yes, 7937. You can jump in on the Bruins. Do you like the matchup? Are you okay with how they're playing because of the matchup they got? Was it worth it? Or is this going to come back to bite them? And is Toronto due in some way, shape, or form against the Bees? You can jump in on all of that. We'll get back to Robert Kraft stabbing Bill in the back. There's a few other items we haven't gotten to from that story, including what Bill's going to do in the meantime while he's out of a job this year. Let's get to it next.
This is Jones and Mega on WEEI. WEEI.
I think that Bill Belichick thought he at least had a really good shot at this job, even before I think he exited the Patriots. And I think it's one of the reasons why things went so smoothly. Why, you know, people who know Bill said that he was in a really good place the day of the press conference. I just wonder if Bill had more of a indefinite future, if he didn't have something in his back pocket, would things have gone so smoothly? I think Bill thought he had the Falcons in his back pocket.
How do you think he is just kind of processing this right now?
I think he's pissed. I think he's really upset about this. I think that he had this job. I can tell you this, I really, really hope Bill Belichick lands in the NFC South with his next job, if he gets a next job, because I would like to see what he does to the Falcons each time he plays them.
It's Greg Bedard. As I said in real time, that was my exact reaction. Ooh, what's Bill gonna do? And he didn't wind up in the NFC South.
As just, Just wait till Bill enters his NFC South era.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Think of all the teams he out-schemed in the last 2 years. There's so many. But as Ryan said off the air, you know, from the future, we can now look back at that and mock it because Bill has no job and may never get one again. It's our big question of the day up now at Jones and Mego. Let's see where we're at. I haven't checked this in a while. At last check, it was 51-49. Will Bill Belichick ever coach in the NFL again? It's actually gone up in Mego's favor. 52%. Yes,
Thank
he
you.
Will. 48% say
Thank
no.
Thank you, Super PAC, for listening and agreeing. I very deeply appreciate you.
So continue to vote there. You can dial us up, 617-779-7937. I want to get to some of the big stuff in the story coming up at 4. There's a few other items that jumped out to me that are kind of picked up pieces that I want to work through here. Bill was told that morning that it was his job to lose. Belichick was then eliminated, okay? This offseason's lack of opportunities left Belichick, quote-unquote, kind of shocked, a source close to him said. And within a week, he was interviewing agents to help him find a television gig. Okay? So it seems like that's going to be Omaha. We read that detail earlier. He was on with Pat McAfee today. What'd you think, by the way? Cadlick tweeted this out. He said, Bill's going to be so good on TV. Garbage. I mean, he didn't say anything. There was nothing.
Was he being sarcastic?
I don't think so. Do you think that was sarcasm from Cadlick? I don't know. He said he liked whatchamacallit. He liked the nickname Thundercat in real time, too. So I don't think that's sarcasm. I think he thinks Bill is going to be really great on TV. And he didn't say anything. He wasn't even asked. And this is what I think is going to be annoying about Bill if he is a real media member. If he's on Omaha Productions, he can totally control everything. He's not going to be on set where he's asked something uncomfortable or there's something off the cuff. He's going to be protected if he's working for Omaha Productions, which is probably why he wants to do it. And McAfee to him is a safe space. I guarantee he said, yeah, I'll go on your show, Pat. But we're just talking draft. Don't ask me about how it ended in New England, what I'm doing in the future. Don't ask me about this story today at ESPN, which, by the way, we're going to talk to one of the authors of that story, Jeremy Fowler, at 5 o'clock. He co-authored the story with Don Van Natta and Seth Wickersham, voted off the island inside Bill Belichick's failed job hunt. So stay tuned for that. Later on in the show, you can listen live here on WEEI or on the Odyssey app. I think that's part of why he's going to be boring on TV, because he's not going to say anything.
I know he was super bland because I was just fascinated with his background. He had this beautiful uplighting on his shelving system behind him with all the, like, what were those, fake Lombardis?
Yeah.
They're like fake mini Lombardis. Yeah, I don't know. Right. And then some beautiful drapery and a wonderful mantle whenever they zoomed out.
You notice how many were behind him?
Eight.
I think it was six. I think he's
six and then two other football. Yeah, I don't know what the other trophies were.
I think he's poking a hole in his own theory that he's got eight rings. I think I only saw two. I only saw six. One, two, three, four, five, six. I only see six. But anyway, keep going.
Okay. Anyway, that might be the camera angle. But yeah, I look for that program and he's going to be on with them next Thursday doing their draft spectacular or whatever. Like, I just think that the way that he talks about the draft is going to be so veiled and bland and boring. So it's kind of like what you expected to get out of it. When I first saw him, when we walked in here and it's up on the TV, I go, what the hell is that?
We thought he
what
was
the
problem.
Hell is happening? He's responding to the article. Turn it on. It's like, well, you know, when you're evaluating talent, there were times where, geez, we never thought that we were going to get Devin McCourty or what. It's like, what is this? Come on.
We thought he was going to be dropping bombs. And that was not the case.
Sometimes you interview a group of players. Sometimes it's just one individually. Yeah. Sometimes it's
Let
one
me
and
tell
then
you
another
the
va- over the,
the
course
value
of
those,
I could see AJ Hawk falling asleep.
No, it's like, that's just how he always looks. Yeah. But it's like
that's a normal McAfee show, yeah.
The value of these top 30 visits, so much more valuable than you'd think with these 15-minute visits. And it's like, what is this?
Yeah, it's like he made a couple of jokes so people think he's super jovial and entertaining. And in reality, it was a bore.
Props.
Yeah. Here's what else I picked up from the story. McKay and Fontenot, two of the executives in Atlanta. I forget McKay's title. Is he the president? Fontenot's the GM. Also were concerned about the staff Belichick was going to bring in with him. And this is fair of them. Including
McKay's
assistants,
the CEO, by the way.
I'm sorry. Including assistants who had worked with him in New England and who had struggled on their own. Josh McDaniels, Joe Judge, Jack Easterby, Matt Patricia. At one point, Blank, not McKay, not Fontenot, Arthur Blank, asked Bill Belichick why his charges had failed elsewhere. Belichick replied he thought they were better soldiers than generals.
Ouch.
I mean, I don't think he's
not wrong.
It's tough.
But man, oh man, somewhere Patricia is reading that, Arkan, and what's he saying?
Ah, that's really unfair, Bill. I think I'd make a great general. All the great generals had a big appetite.
General Powell.
or Colonel Sanders. I would have made a great colonel with my special secret recipe. General Gao, a Colonel Sanders, you know, something like that.
So no, I think that's very, very insulting. I don't think Bill's wrong, but I think that's very insulting. Better soldiers than generals.
Captain Crunch, there's a man you can model yourself after.
There's also this, for the most part of the 2023 season, this is interesting. When chatter around the league was that Belichick was in the final year in New England, he believed he could turn it around and coach the Patriots in 2024, serving the final year of his two-year contract, reported to be worth $25 million a year. However, a source close to Robert Kraft said he considered moving on from Bill after 2022. But his son, Jonathan Kraft, talked him out of it.
What a guy.
Now, that one just doesn't make that much sense to me, I got to be honest.
Okay, why not?
Because I think Jonathan, like one of the biggest takeaways to me was that the article starts with them saying, yeah, Arthur Blank talked to Robert Kraft. He also talked to Jonathan Kraft, which makes me go back to like the Gerard Mayo intro press conference and be like, oh, yeah, no. Jonathan has to go deal with the elevator emergency over at the cardboard factory. And it's like pretending like Jonathan has nothing to do with football. Meanwhile, Jonathan's opinion seems to carry a lot of weight, whether it's with Arthur Blank, who he's talking to on the phone, or his own dad. And I just don't think that his opinion, if you even watch the two of them in the press box last season when the camera is on them, it doesn't appear that Jonathan Kraft's opinion of Bill is very high.
What, yeah.
What do you think Jonathan said? Like, what do you think his pitch was? No, Robert, don't fire Bill because what? Like, what was Jonathan
That's
saying?
That's just a strange thing.
Okay, yeah, like, well, I have a theory. Jonathan was the one in the booth, by the way. Didn't Gresh lip read? And Jonathan was the one that said this team's like so unwatchable or whatever he said, remember?
He said it's just not good enough.
That's what it was, not good enough. So, I don't know. I mean, Jonathan Kraft took credit before for moving on from Aaron Hernandez. Remember in the dynasty?
Sure, right. But I'm saying, why did he fight to keep Bill and talk?
Because this is a spin on it. I don't know. He wants to look like the
one
that
kept it
together.
Yeah, but that doesn't make him look any better. It doesn't make him look better.
It
doesn't? If he waited a year to fire him, why'd you wait a year? He had a bad year. You should have fired him sooner.
Okay, why didn't they fire him in season? They didn't want the blowback.
I understand that. I'm just saying, I don't understand. Like, if that's Jonathan Kraft trying to make himself look better, it didn't do him any favors to wait.
I don't think Jonathan Kraft wants to be looked at as the impatient one. I don't think he wants to be looked at as the one who's like, he's chopping heads. I don't think he wants to be looked at that way. Because I think when he's going to be in power, that's going to be the book on him. And so maybe he's distancing himself from that a little bit. Or who knows? Maybe he's taking the fall for his dad. That's possible too. I'm with you though. I don't believe it. Whatever the reason, I don't believe that detail in there. Just like I don't believe he's the one that says, yeah, Robert and Bill, do whatever you want. We're cutting Hernandez. 617-779-7937. You can jump in on all of this. We'll get back to the biggest takeaways from this story, which include the Falcons really not being all that interested in Bill Belichick at the end of the day, and how much of it had to do with Robert Kraft. Let's get to it next.